Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, March 13th, 2017. And this says, before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV, happy Monday, everyone. It is a chilly 17 degrees, snowing, and we are under a winter storm warning with a big nor'easter blasting up the East Coast here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Cognitive Era, Robot Hackers, and, quote, Serving Men on an IoT, Internet of Things platter. And if you remember, we started out the show, or were supposed to, and if you listened to the recording, the Memorex, not live, you heard Ginny Rometty. By the way, Microsoft, with their upgrades, apparently broke something. And I spent another about hour messing around, so it takes me up to 9.5 hours, I believe, with, actually, now about this point, 10 hours, because it was a whole hour I messed, not a half, with Microsoft's new Skype upgrade. The first 9 hours were just getting it installed on 3 of 4 machines. Number 4 machine, I don't believe, is going to allow me to install it. And then yesterday, trying to figure out why Stereo Mix just mysteriously stopped working, Stereo Mix gave me the ability to be able to play clips on my desktop while I was doing the show, or be able to stream from my desktop if there's an issue where a simulcast doesn't cut over in my automation. And it looks like Skype has done something with the codec that does the compression or whatever they're doing on the sound in Skype itself. And for the time being, it is now working. So I won't be able to play any clippies. But not why I even brought that up. Not sure why I didn't bring that up. Not sure why I did bring that up. Sorry, guys. It's been a long weekend. But anyway, let's go back to where we left off on Friday. So we had discussed how the robots are coming, how the AI is coming, how Ginny Rometty has launched Watson. And Watson is really kind of standing up and showing what he's made of. He's doing all kinds of stuff. We have the AI Ross lawyer. We mentioned him. And he, of course, is working in oncology now. And I got to tell you, I do have a neighbor, my mom's neighbor, who is ill. And she has cancer. She's been meeting with some oncologists and stuff. And I found out that the hospital here in upstate New York back 2 years ago looks like it started having some interactions with Watson. And I got to say, when I started digging into her type of cancer, and by the way, thank you, Dell, for sending me information. Some of the stuff that you were aware of, I still need to get there. Trust me. I will if it's humanly possible. But I was very surprised that the hospital up here had started partnering with IBM's Watson as well. So I'm really hoping that it is beneficial for her. This will be my first personal contact that has had access to Watson. But everything that I was reading in National Institute of Health documentation was warning just how crucial it was to make certain that you knew what you were doing in the treatment. It's a very difficult cancer, and if you go out of order or you screw things up, it's going to be curtains. So, you know I mock Watson. But on the other hand, if Watson was the big pulsating brain that was going to come up with the miraculous cure for you, I think you might want to listen. But what is scary about not just Watson, but any of this technology in general, is that it's a dangling carrot that is sucking us into the machine. You know, as these technologies make our lives more convenient and easier, we'll just keep being more and more accepting. And you have people who'll just step right up. And it's said that what this reminds me of If I had to think back of something in my past that all this technology makes me think of, it was To Serve Man on the Twilight Zone. And I have to tell you, we actually watched some of those this weekend because I mentioned that episode so many times on the show. So I had to look it up. And I'm going to say it again. If you have not seen To Serve Man, or it's been a long time, you need to watch it again. It was stellar. And now I absolutely see why it's always stuck with me and why it reminds me of what is happening today. It was interesting the other night. It was the 12th, so it must have been at some point in the last more than 24 hours. That episode, To Serve Man, was aired March 2nd, 1962. I was kind of doing the math in my head. You know, that's hard for me sometimes, early in the morning and late at night. But it was exactly 55 years and 10 days since that episode aired that we were watching it again. And I was thinking, how prophetic is it? You know, it even made me think about the Internet of Everything as he was being instructed not to use too much water as he's washing his hands, or you must eat, it's good for you. And from the loudspeaker as he is laying in his 21st century room with sterile walls. You know, it just, to me, the more that we give up to the machine, the more our autonomy is going to be stolen, the more they're going to recommend that the best solution for you is to listen to the great oracle, the machine. And they're going to want to get that stuff inside of us. And I know, if you haven't listened to this show before, go back about 300 episodes. But if you've been listening to the show, you know that it's true. And that's starting to roll out now, all in the name of healthcare, all in the name of curing you. Between nanobots in your blood and Watson robot doctors and lawyers and baristas and Wall Street and fast food workers. We also have, you know, word editors and social media. It's just all coming. So we listened to Ginny Rometty, and she gave a speech. And if you did miss it, just go back to Friday's show and crank it up, because even the volume was a little low. I don't know. It's really a kludgy way now of having to share clips. But I did it. I got it into the archive, at least. But Ginny Rometty gives a talk about how important AI, and particularly Watson, is going to be in the future. And, of course, it's all going to be about helping you, not replacing you. And, you know, that's what they keep saying over and over and over again. But, you know, again, that is not true. You know, I'm seeing this drumbeat now all over the place about, oh, my goodness, what happens when they do take all the jobs? Because it isn't. And if it's a when, and we read that very recently, I believe it was in an MIT Technology Review story. You know, this is coming. It is coming faster than any of us imagine. Now, every once in a while, they'll come out with one that says, oh, well, we have a new prediction for the singularity. I just saw one the other day that says now 2047. I say, bullshit. That, again, is way too out into the distant future. I think it's going to be more like 2030 for perfection. And I think between 2017 and 2030, they're going to be all balls out testing it. And we are going to be the A number one version for guinea pigs. So we have brain implants all done in the name of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. And that stuff is chugging right along. And then, of course, nanobots in your blood and all these different kinds now. On the name of curing cancer. Those are the first steps to transhumanization. You know, and then you have DARPA, shape-shifting immune systems. You know, once stuff like that gets inside of us, being able to genetically modify us on the fly to be able to defend against pathogens, known or unknown, all in the name of safety of the American people. Now, you see that one coming because, oh, no, we've democratized all these technologies that now makes this world such a dangerous place because anybody could CRISPR anything. And then let some sort of horror upon the United States as a terror attack. Oh, the only defense. It isn't going to be prophylaxis. It isn't going to be vaccines, traditionally. It isn't going to be the national stockpile where we actually had all kinds of experimental vaccines back from Bush's days. Project BioShield. Oh, no, no. We have this newfangled thing. It's going to allow us to inject you with these. And I'm not even sure. There's so many different projects going on. There's the TIPS one, but then there's the other one. Actually flipped some switches. They wrote about it in the New York Times, I believe. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the New York Times. We'll have to find that one later. But it actually allows your body to shapeshift, your immune system to shapeshift according to what the infection, the pathogen is. And in that New York Times story, they're like, oh, yeah, well, it's actually genetic modification of humans. Sounds a lot like the Insect Allies program and what they are doing when they infect those insects that then go munch on the plant, pass that genetically modified bacteria that they infected the insects with along to the plant, and it goes and it genetically modifies the plant to keep it safe from whatever pathogen was attacking it. Well, it's similar to what they are talking about doing to humans. And you know, Ginny Rimini, don't worry. Robots are going to help us, not replace us. Well, a few things I wanted to talk about. So we've discussed lots and lots about DARPA, lots and lots about IBM and good old Watson. I don't know if you realize IBM is in the middle of a lot of crazy things. We also saw a while back IBM had created again the top spot for the world's fastest supercomputer, some experimental thing that they then handed over to, I believe it was Lawrence Livermore, if that's the government facility that is in California, and I'm pretty sure that's the one. Los Alamos is in New Mexico, so it's got to be Lawrence Livermore, the other L one. And IBM is working on a bunch of other things. I covered a few stories now in the past. This one caught my attention on Saturday. IBM seriously just turned an atom into the world's smallest hard drive. All right, go IBM. We spent a lot of time talking about smart dust last week. In the 3 days that we were able to make it. And by the way, I'm just going to warn you, so it's, you know, between the weather and we've been getting slamming. Guys, by the way, I was doing some deep-ass research into University of Alaska and their connections with DARPA, because you know that that is where the HAARP antennas are located, up in Anchorage. And there's a lot of military up there. U.S. Air Force and DARPA had their hands on that antenna array. And, I mean, there's no doubt that it's there. There's no doubt that it's been used for research. And they will actually come out and tell you it's for upper atmosphere research, low frequency. They manipulate things. But I'm going to tell you, I think it came across a document last night that was on a physics website, physics.org, I believe. And it had a bunch of information in the Google description. And when I clicked on it, you know, don't tell me that I am not authorized, especially when you've given me a little taste in the search engine. So I happen to go into the cached version. I don't know if you knew that. When you do search on Google and you see the link under the title, if you click on it and it's not there, go back. There's a lot of times you'll see this little tiny black arrow next to the URL in the search. Click on that little tiny black arrow because if you're lucky, you'll see an option called cached. Click on that. Because that'll be the last time that Google scraped the page for indexing. So even if that page has been blocked or deleted or anything since then, Google still's got a copy. Hey, so much for surveillance. Sometimes it can work to your benefit. So I clicked on that little down arrow, and I saw cached. I was like, oh, yay. January 29th, Google scraped that page, and I was able to open it up. I was able to print it as a PDF, and it gives some huge details as to who's been involved since the quote-unquote shutdown handoff to the University of Alaska, and now the new experimentation is what is going on, who is involved, what groups have been involved, how much money has been exchanged, and exactly what they are doing down there. Now, I don't know. Maybe there's been information like that out there. I learned more last night about HARP than I ever did before, and this was an official document. This wasn't even, like, off of some tinfoil hat wearing site, so we'll be talking about that soon. It even gave the actual frequencies that it's pumping out and what it's doing with it. So I got really excited. But I digress again. We've been talking about a lot of different things. Anything nano has been huge. The smaller and faster it is, the better. They want to get it into us. They want it all over the environment. We talked about those biosensors and microsensors, nanosensors and smart dust and neurodust to be able to bag, tag, and track everything. Everything and anything that they potentially want and tie that all in to this mass surveillance we have going on. We discovered digging into some of what came out of Vault 7, and hey, none of that was a surprise to us. If you listen to the show, I'm pretty certain we covered just about every single one of those stories. You know, I still had someone yesterday going, well, but look what they exposed. I'm like, but what did they expose? Again, I really think this is all a psyop. This is to show you and the dumb, unsuspecting public just how, quote-unquote, unsecure we are. So we can have things in a problem, reaction, solution mode, such as DARPA's mayhem, shape-shifting immune system for the internet. We need to lock it down. We need to tie it all down and block all those holes. And, of course, mayhem will be the century. Skynet has been released. By the way, guys, give me a kudos. I saw something a couple weeks ago, a T-shirt maker online. I think they were $6.com with a six. And they had some, you know, I was just sitting here one night trying to get my mind off of things for 5 minutes before I went and jumped back in both feet forward. So I'm clicking around, click, 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 click. And I found a good one or two that I had to buy. One was the two alien people from They Live. There were lots of them, but there were two of them that were reporters sitting at a news desk on the front of a T-shirt in the shape of a TV, and it says above them, watch TV. And you got the two news reporters looking all like they did when Roddy Piper had the sunglasses on. They're all robot alien-esque. So that was cool. But the other one that I just couldn't resist was the big triangular red logo that says Skynet above it. So I wear those with pride. I don't know, they just came the other day. I'm wearing my Watch TV robot alien shirt now. Tomorrow I'll wear Skynet. But they're for me doing broadcasting and maybe to wake up some of the masses. Anyway, so as we've been watching all of this unfold, you know, and now they're using this stuff once they drop these large bombs of information on people in this shocking package. You know, let's mix into that we have this political dissident that's releasing it, and it's all from a quote-unquote whistleblower that's on the inside. You know, this is just setting us up. Of course, it's all going to be now, oh, national security. Oh, look at what it has done to our reputation globally. Oh, look at, you know, we have all these things that are going on that are to keep us protected. You know, we have terrorists under every bed, and if we are not surveilling, if we don't hold all of the keys, it's going to put us in danger. And I think they really are going to spin it their way, and God forbid that the Russians had anything to do with this latest hack release. But IBM has been in there with the best of them. IBM has been on the inside for a very long time. We've dug into the history of IBM, and I don't know mentally if I'm spry enough to do that this morning. Maybe tomorrow. But a brand new story, IBM seriously just turned an atom, a single atom, into the world's smallest hard drive. We discussed DNA the other day. They have been storing DNA, and I think, what did we find out? A movie, a coupon, and something else, and some DNA, yeah, and some cat pictures. Data storage technology continues to shrink in size and growing capacity, but scientists have just taken things to the next level. They have built a nanoscale hard drive using a single atom. And by magnetizing an atom, cooling it with liquid helium, and then storing it in an extreme vacuum, the team managed to store a single bit of data, either a 1 or a 0, in this incredibly minuscule space. Well, that's interesting. So they magnetized an atom, cooled it with liquid helium, and stored it in an extreme vacuum. You know, those sound like conditions very close to what I would imagine in outer space. Not enough room for your holiday photos. Well, then, according to a team from IBM Research in California, ding-a-ling-a-ling, same place that Lawrence Livermore is, this proof-of-concept approach could eventually lead to drives the size of a credit card and even smaller still in the future that could hold an entire iTunes or Spotify library of about 30 million songs each. We conducted this research, and wink, we're not working with the government at all to understand what happens when you shrink technology down to the most fundamental extreme, the atomic scale, says one of the researchers, nanoscientist Christopher Lutz. The team deployed its Nobel Prize-winning scanning tunneling microscope for the experiment, which uses the, and I thought so, tunneling phenomenon, oh, spooky, action at a distance in quantum mechanics, where electrons can be pushed through barriers. To study electronics at an atomic scale, with the extreme vacuum conditions inside of the scanning tunneling microscope, I'm telling you, IBM is way, way space age advanced with some of the stuff that they are working on now. Free from air molecules and other types of contamination, scientists were able to successfully manipulate a holmium atom. I have never heard of that before. That has got to be, let's open this quick. Copy, open link a new tab. God. It's like brain damage morning. This morning is what I feel like. Holmium is a chemical element with a symbol H-O. Ho! How come I've never seen this on a periodic table? Is this a new one? I mean, it's number 67. Where'd this come from? They changed this since 1984-ish. You know, this is different. Holmium. With an atomic number 67, it is part of the lanthanide series. Holmium is a rare earth element. Oh, yes. Holmium was discovered by a Swedish chemist, Per Theodore Cleve. It is an oxide and was first isolated from rare earth ores in 1878. And it was named after a city in Stockholm. So slap me around. I guess I just must have missed that one in chemistry class. Too many boys back in 1984. Anyway. The microscope also applies liquid helium cooling, which is important in adding stability to the magnetic reading and writing process. So you got to use an atom at absolute zero. And a complete and utter vacuum with an electron microscope to be able to read and write a 1 or a 0. So I'm assuming that this is going to be quite a while before we start having atomic hard drives. But hey, proof of concept, though, is all they need, especially when we can put IBM Watson on it. Thanks to that carefully controlled environment, The team could accurately read and write two magnetically charged atoms just a single nanometer apart, and that is 1/1,000,000th of a width of a pinhead. And with the help of the microscope, the scientists could deliver an electrical current that turns the magnetic orientation of the single atom up or down, mimicking the operation of a normal hard drive, but on a much, much smaller scale. Today's hard drives use about 100,000 atoms to store a single bit. So you can get an idea of the difference that we are talking about. So they use 100,000 atoms to store a single bit, and now we are talking about using one atom to store bazillions of bits. Actually, one atom for one zero or one. The team says the technique could produce drives that are 1,000 times denser than the ones we have right now. While the process is going to remain much too difficult and expensive to use commercially for some time, what happens in technology? Oh, smaller, better, faster, cheaper. That's what it happens, and it's every couple years with the law of exponential returns, and especially with Watson on the back end of IBM. Remember, they can turn Watson to any direction. They can deploy him anywhere. He is replicating already. I'm telling you, Watson is getting into so many places. And you gotta love to hate Watson. I'd love to have Watson cure my friends and family of illness. But I don't think I would want to go up against Watson on Jeopardy. That was already how many years ago when we first listened to that 60 Minutes clip with, I believe it was Charlie Rose interviewing the creator of Watson, and he had said it was like taking him to the bus stop for his first day of school when they released him on Jeopardy. And that was when they let the, and they specifically said these exact words, that was when they let the genie out of the bottle. Well, that was quite a number of years ago, and Watson has been improving by leaps and bounds, moving into different areas and learning more and more at a million pages a second. Guys, it's coming. It's definitely coming. You better be preparing yourselves for what is going to happen when we all of a sudden find our robot overlords are the ones that are running everything. Because it is coming. They will not be able to keep control of this stuff. There is no off switch like Obama joked at Carnegie Mellon when he was talking about AI transforming the country. Okay, there is no off switch. We have Google and Microsoft and all the big boys on some committee panel to decide how we are going to protect humans and create an off switch. I don't know about you, but again, like we've seen in so many other cases, it is like the fox watching the hen house. I don't trust any of them. Do not trust them. And yeah, I was just reading some new psychological profiling thing in one of my neuron searches that I get into my Google mailbox. How people who don't trust have a mental disease. People who believe in conspiracy theories tend to don't trust. And that's another mental disorder. Well, I'm going to again say bullshit. It is when you've been duped time and time and time and time and time again, when you start digging into history and you discover that half of what you've been sold as an official bill of goods is a bunch of bullshit. They've been lying and cheating and stealing and doing shit behind your back. All kinds of secret programs that you weren't supposed to know about, Johnny. And oh, once we have one of these leaks come out, you know, we kind of pretend that maybe, I don't know. We're not sure, but that's all fake news, remember? They put the seed of doubt, but look, there's no one coming out denying any of this. And as for as shocking as this Vault 7 was, like I said, we covered just about every single one of those technologies on an individual basis over the last 2, 3, 4 years as little stories sippy-cupped out about them. So there's nothing in there. Don't go telling me that there's any conspiracy involved. This isn't conspiracy. This isn't tinfoil hat. This isn't mental disorder. Because we believe that the feds are doing stuff behind our back that they shouldn't be doing. Because guess what? They are. It's just, this whole, it's a huge psyop that they are playing on us. You know, the fact that we got good old Tommy Insel now, we haven't talked about mental health in a while, but I think we're going to get back there one of these days soon. But good old Tommy Insel slid over, he had a slidey shoot out of the National Institute of Mental Health right into Google's Valley division to deal with mental health issues, curing, diagnosing and curing through voice patterns with smartphones. Of course, the 21st Century Cures Act that gives them the ability to non-invasively monitor you for your neurological conditions in case you would be a danger to yourself or others. You know, there's some really ugly dotted lines. And we have IBM Watson, who's getting really, really good at being able to process large amounts of data, crunch numbers. We have Google's supercomputer, DeepMind. We have Microsoft. We have Amazon. All the big boys are in it. All of them. They all have carte blanche. They all are working hand in hand. And we are the product. We are the ones that now are just this big global happy big blue dot. And they can pick any example. And as they are profiling every single one of us and putting everything you do, everything you say, everything about you into your dossier, it'll be really easy to pick the absolute perfect candidates for each new experiment. I just really think that we need to find a way to stop the spreading of the machine. So IBM takes it a step further. You know, we've talked about some of the shape-shifting immune system stuff. We had a story on Friday about this new super-fast self-replicating computer that grows as it computes. Now, doesn't it sound like Watson? This wasn't Watson, but it sure as hell sounds like it. Scientists say it is possible to build a new type of self-replicating computer that replaces silicon chips with processors made from DNA molecules. It will be faster than any other form of computer ever proposed, including quantum. This is called a non-deterministic universal Turing machine, or NUTM for short. It is predicted that the technology could execute all possible algorithms all at once by taking advantage of DNA's ability to replicate almost perfect copies of itself over billions and billions of years. Now that is beyond frightening. This is where we're heading, people. This merging of technology and biology is going to lead us right to this. These self-replicating perfected copies of evil, super-fast self-replicating big pulsating brains. Hey, what are we doing? What is this, like a suicide pact with the devil? What on earth are these people doing? Why would this be allowed? Who would be developing this? And who would think that this is a good idea? This is a bad idea. 10,275,000. Chalk that one up. Unplug it now before it's too late. Put in a virus. I don't know what to say, but the fact that they are talking about creating these machines that are going to outpace us as humans within a very short period of time, like a blink of an eye. Then you got Elon Musk, Mr. Smarty Pants over there, who's in the know. He's on the inside saying, well, yeah, you know, AI, it's gonna kind of screw us up. We're going to become the pets. And you better be smart to be the pet or they might just get rid of you. But hey, you get this new neural lace thing I'm working on that'll allow you to augment yourself so you can at least be conversational with them. And they might find use for you and your creativity. Maybe some of your emotional competence. Something that right now robots don't have. We might keep you around for a while and you might be considered useful. So our choice is to either merge with the machine or be obsolete. By the way, that's another very good Twilight Zone I'll have to find that one too. It's called Obsolete Man, I believe. There was one that they didn't need us anymore. Bill Joy about the future. All right, so the basic idea is that our current electronic computers are based on a finite number of silicon chips. And we are fast approaching that limit that we can actually fit into our machines. We've talked about that many times before. But to address this limitation, researchers are currently working on making quantum computers a reality. And we're going to talk about that because IBM has one. Super powerful devices that replace the bits of an electronic computer with quantum entangled particles called qubits. Unlike regular bits that can only take on the form of a 1 or a 0 in a binary code, a qubit can take on the form of a 0 or a 1, or a superposition of two simultaneously, which allows them to perform many different calculations at once. And obviously, this would result in a huge boost in speed. But quantum computers are incredibly difficult to get right, and because of how complicated this is, to create the exact conditions for not one quantum entangled particle, but a whole lot of them. And despite concerted efforts all over the world, no one, they say, according to this article on March 4th, 2017, has been able to manage to build a fully functioning one. But we will see. I'm not going to click over to that other story yet because I don't want to get lost, but we'll go there. But there is a secret third option, and this is a DNA-based machine that gets all the benefits of quantum computing without the headache of quantum weirdness because it is based on DNA doing what DNA does best, and that is replicating. DNA is an excellent medium for information processing and storage, says the team from the University of Manchester in the UK. It is very stable, as the sequencing of ancient DNA demonstrates, and it can also reliably be copied. And many genes have remained virtually unchanged for billions of years. To give you an idea of the difference such a device can make in the world, imagine that you have a computer program searching a maze, and it reaches a fork in the road. A regular electronic computer would have to decide which path to follow, but a DNA-based computer wouldn't need to choose a path because it could replicate itself and then follow both paths at the same time. Wow, that's mind-bending. Think about that one. They just keep replicating and creating more of themselves to continue to do more processes. That's horrifying. And with both paths covered, the program could figure out which one leads to the end of the maze far quicker than an electronic computer that could only test one at a time. Our computer's ability to grow as it computes makes it faster than any other form of computer and enables the solution of many computational problems previously considered impossible. Quantum computers are an exciting other form of computer. They can also follow paths in a maze, but only if the maze has certain symmetries, which greatly limits their use. And not only that, but imagine no longer being constrained by the physical limits of using silicon chips. No, let's make them biological, which are pretty darn small right now, but are nowhere near the size of a single DNA molecule. And as DNA molecules are very small, a desktop computer could potentially utilize more processors than all electronic computers in the world combined, and therefore outperform the world's current fastest supercomputer while consuming just a teeny tiny fraction of its energy. While DNA-based computers have been proposed since the 1990s, King and his team say that this is the actual first time the feasibility of DNA-based non-deterministic universal Turing machines have been established, and we demonstrate that this design works using both computational modeling and in vitro molecular biology experimentation. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling! Oh, this is really frightening. Researchers propose using DNA molecules to represent information based on the four-character genetic alphabet, and I've talked about this before. This is using ATCG versus zeros and ones, which opens up an exponential increase in capabilities. This is exactly some of the stuff that they were doing, too, when they added two new synthetic amino acids to the DNA strand, if you remember that. And there was a brand new story about synthetic life forms that came out this weekend, but I don't know if I'm going to get there today. Maybe tomorrow as we continue down this train of thought. But this is the same thoughts as we had when we had looked at the synthetic genome, where they had taken A, T, C, and G, and they have added two more amino acids, synthetic amino acids called X and Y, that took it from a 4-base to a 6-base. Take that over the zeros and ones in binary, and there's no stopping them. They say the regular computers, which are classified as universal Turing machines, the UTM, can then be converted into non-deterministic universal Turing machines, the NUTM, NUTM. And they can use a programming language on these biological machines called THUE, T-H-U-E, invented by software engineer John Colingioia in early 2000. THUE programming language can take strings of alphabet symbols and rewrite them in different orders to create completely separate strings for a self-replicating form of data processing. The application of a THUE rule to a string therefore produces a new string. Because multiple THUE rules can be applied to a single string, an individual THUE rule can be applied to multiple positions in a string, the computing possibilities are virtually endless. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. The team has also demonstrated that DNA is physically strong enough to act as a processor in this setup, something that previous experiments have also shown. And now it is up to someone to actually build this thing for real. And though that is probably many years off, wink, I'll bet you someone's already toying with it down a deep, dark hallway, sprinkle-funded by some sort of Department of Defense department behind a closed door. But if the researchers are correct in their assumptions, we've just been given a roadmap to the sickest, strangest, and most intimidating computer system ever. I hope we are ready for it. My assertions completely. The big pulsating room of Jabba the Hutt is coming. I mean, guys, what are they doing? They are putting us on a collision course with complete and utter biological destruction. Without even a bat of an eye, the fact that we are talking about this, the fact that they've suggested it, you know, the second they suggest it, the second they spin it out there, you know somebody somewhere, if they are working on it already, somebody just went, hey, get on that, Charlie. We got $5 billion to get this project started today, now. Gotta be China. It's coming, guys. We are in a technology war with the other, quote-unquote, superpowers in this world. It all balls out. He who dies with the most toys wins. So don't think that this DNA is super mutating computing machine is just pure fantasy, because I will bet you anything it is not. They are already messing with it somewhere. All right, so here's another one. So now let's move to IBM. So they were like, yeah, quantum schmantum. Forget quantum. These DNA-based self-growing mutating computers are going to be way bigger. Well, IBM just said the other day that a new quantum computing system tackles problems that are too complex for traditional computers. Businesses get ready to move away from traditional computing architecture. Ginny Remitti already warned us. Well, here it comes. Today, on March 5th, 2017, IBM said it is developing a cloud-based quantum computing system. So it's not just going to be in a big room. Oh, no, it's going to be in the sky, and it's going to have its tentacles everywhere, which will pair with a series of services in a bid to radically change the types of computing problems that can be addressed. Big Blue, i.e. IBM, said its new quantum experience is aimed at expanding, quote, the application domain of quantum computing, unquote, tackling, quote, problems that are currently seen as too complex and exponential in nature for classical computing systems to handle, or let's translate that, you puny humans, because here comes Watson. Watson is going to be given his next iteration. IBM says that it thinks its new architecture will be particularly well-suited for addressing problems in chemistry, as well as drug and material discovery, supply chain and logistics, financial services, artificial intelligence, and cloud-based security, as well as many other things, and such as the company will be releasing its new API, its application programming interface. Remember, that's how they let these things get out. They give you an API so you can integrate it into all your applications and all your business backends and become dependent upon it. So then they forever have their hooks into you, meant to enable developers to tie into the Quantum Experience program and to do so without a specific expertise in quantum physics. How crazy is that? So put on a seatbelt. Quantum computing is on its way. And if there wasn't another reason to be worried about IBM, we talked about DARPA and their shape-shifting immune system. We found out that Mayhem is already being utilized in the commercial space. That was that super computing software that was built out of the Cyber Grand Challenge. It won from Carnegie Mellon University in Nevada this past summer. It was DARPA-funded, running on DARPA supercomputers. They are now that we found out just how insecure our world is, remember DARPA Dan told us just a few months before, we now have Mayhem, who has been rebranded and spun into a company called For All Secure, that is starting to scan the internet to find all the holes to be able to bag, tag, and patch in, oh, attack hackers as well. Well, IBM is also working on developing shape-shifting immune systems, and just like DARPA is working on one for humans, so is IBM. IBM is developing a super molecule to destroy all viruses. If you lined up everything alive on the planet today, and that's what they're doing right now, they're bag tagging and tracking, or at least they want to, every living organism on this planet, every single one, they are putting us into genome databases and figuring out all the chinks in the armor, what makes us tick, and the next step is to apply artificial intelligence to figure out how to mix and match. And not just between biological organisms, but we just found out between biological and synthetic organisms, whether they be computers or whether they be man-made, with the hope of making us some sort of future life form. We are in a very, very, very frightening time right now. If you lined up everything alive on the planet today and counted them one by one, you'll find that viruses are the most common creatures by far. They are pervasive, pathogenic varieties, and they are notoriously hard to treat. It's a recent Ebola outbreak and a Zika pandemic test. And of course, Ebola and Zika, we covered those at length when they were happening. And again, it was all a big psyop. Look, oh, we have all these new technologies now with CRISPRing that came out of the Ebola and the Zika quote-unquote outbreaks. We have all these switch flippings. And look, these weird immunotherapy treatments. We could suck out blood and put it into someone else and plasma and whatever. Let's see what happens. By the way, some of that is what got me into digging into some natural remedies for killing viruses. And I want to say thank you to Camille. Camille, I did not forget about you. So I want to tell you the last like week and a half has been kind of hairy. I just haven't been able to keep up. But I did get your elderberries that you recommended. I talked about the norovirus. We had a double whammy here right at the end of January into probably most of the way through February. Between that upper respiratory flu, my daughter got it, passed it on to me. It was brutal. I was sick for a really long time. I don't know, that was maybe 3 whole weeks. But I guess it's not just me, because everyone that I've heard has had it. It's been a good 3 weeks. It starts in your head and it goes to your chest, and it is just so, so extremely hard on the body. But then we got hit with the norovirus. My daughter came home from school one Friday and said, hey, I'm not feeling good, Mom. And it was right before their vacation for President's Day. And she started barfing, and that was the end of that. Another week gone by. But in my research, I had discovered couple different products, and one happened to be elderberries. And elderberries were very beneficial in helping kill norovirus in particular. It was this elderberry syrup. But Camille, I got a bag. I'll actually maybe link that in the notes. It was recommended by a listener for some organic dried elderberries. You can get them in a bag. They had them at, I think it was Vitacost. And I made a tea with them last night. Put them in. Listen, I don't know. I put them the first time. I just threw them all into a cup and dumped hot water on them. But then you're going to be chewing on these little elderberries with seeds on them. And I guess it's all right. But second time I thought, you know what? I got one of those little tea balls with the holes in it. So I filled up my tea ball with little elderberries and put them in my cup. And the one thing that I've been reading about in conjunction with all of this was these bioflavonoids and how good they are for your internals and how they help your arteries and blood vessel connectivity, and they just help your internals a lot. They find longevity has a lot to do with bioflavonoids. A lot of the berries have these in them. So I want to say thank you, Camille, because I did get those. Lactoferrin was the other thing that I ran across. And that kefir thing that you found out, I actually shared that with my mother because she has an issue with histamine resistance. And she was going to try kefir, so she decided she might not because of your research. But anyway, so I will. I promise. I will respond. I just hate to feel like I'm negligent. But it's just so many balls to juggle, and every day something comes up, and it's like putting out the biggest fire. So, anyway, what's that? Well, first off, viruses are incredibly small, hundreds of times smaller than your average human cell. And though they cannot take the immune system head on, they can infiltrate your body, hijack cells, and use them to replicate. And we've talked about viruses a lot of times, because guess what? Scientists discovered a long time ago that they can hijack viruses and use them as a Trojan horse to put genetically modified contents into the virus after they suck out the guts and then utilize them to infect cells in order to genetically modify them. Oh, yes. And we've seen that time and time again. Viruses, yeah, they are nature's wonder because they are really good at infiltrating cells and finding the chinks in the armor. But once inside, a virus splices its own DNA into that, or the DNA they put into it, into that host cell, and it takes over and uses then the cell's own machinery to replicate itself. Well, IBM has found a way to hijack that. They are working now on a mere proof of concept. Far more studies will be required to confirm its efficacy and safety in humans, of course. Wink, step right up. It's going to become a new treatment for something that if you're desperate and dying enough, you might step right up, hand them some money, and get it to try. But if successful, IBM's technology might become a medication or a disinfectant wipe or a spray cleaner or even a hand sanitizer that might be able to ward off viral infection, or like in the ways of DARPA, it might just become an edible vaccine or something of that nature that would flip a few switches in your immune system, or maybe it'd become a tips or pips switch to be able to protect you by genetically modifying you. So where does that all leave us? Well, that leaves us with us resistant consumers who don't want to accept this machine, the Luddites, damn you. We are the ones that are going to be deemed mentally defective. We are going to be the ones, the older generation typically, who has not been groomed from birth and addicted to the machine. Warning, beep, 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 Scientific American verifies everything I've been telling you about dopamine. Your new digital world is highly addictive, and I'm going to add to that, it was designed that way. Technology now is designed to make it, quote-unquote, irresistible, argues psychology and marketing professor Adam Alter. Science, and this is from March 7th, science has learned many lessons about what makes something addictive. And I'm telling you, it was by design. And now this knowledge is being used by the tech industry to gain our attention and to keep us coming back for more. In his new book, Irresistible, New York University Associate Professor of Marketing Adam Alter argues that society is experiencing the beginnings of an epidemic of behavioral addiction, and that this could have dangerous and far-reaching implications for us all. And we are not talking substances. We are talking hard devices. Fight on, you Adam Alter. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. I will catch up.